hell?
Everybody get up! Everybody get up! Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like GEICO is more than just a company that can save you money. GEICO also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Go!
GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
What's up, guys? Ogre Nation News Podcast. My name is Salman Ali, at @RedNation_Hoops on Twitter. You're joined by our first guest on the podcast, Raheel Ramzanali from ESPN 97.5 Houston. How you doing today, man?
Hey, what's up, man? Thanks for having me. Excited to be talking some Rockets basketball with two of my favorite follows on Twitter. So I'm excited, man. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. And, of course, we got our other host, Ali Khan Bijani, @Rockets_Insider. How you doing today, man?
Good. How are you? Just exciting times in the world of Rockets basketball. Ready to talk about it.
Yeah, so the Rockets came off a pretty good overtime win against the Blazers tonight. Corey Brewer made a pretty clutch game-tying three in the fourth quarter, and James Harden just kind of took over from there. We kind of saw his first bounce-back performance of the season. Ali Khan had a pretty good stare about him. What was that again?
So James Harden's the only player since the 85-86 season to have 45 points, 11 assists, 8 rebounds, and 5 steals in a game.
Wow. Yeah, so hopefully we get to see more of that. James Harden, James Harden's been playing pretty bad lately, and even in this game, he didn't shoot the ball particularly well for the first three quarters. I'm encouraged by this game. They played a lot better defense. Their transition defense still needs to improve. They're still towards the bottom of the league in transition buckets. I think before this game, they were 29th. And I really like the defense this game. Before this game, they were 29th. They were 28th in defensive efficiency, 23rd in offensive efficiency. And they're close to the bottom of the league in transition defense. And their effort stats have been at an all-time low. I'm talking offensive rebounds, defensive rebounds. I mean, everything. That, like, getting back in transition, James Harden's been playing terrible defense. He's been playing like the 2014-2015 James Harden that we've kind of, you know, wanted to forget about, for, you know, from the YouTube clips. Like, I'm pretty disappointed that he's kind of reverted back to that, but encouraging signs. Of course, we'll get into Mikal and Bickerstaff in a minute. But anything you guys like to add about the game?
Yeah, for me, you know, for Harden, as well as he played in the fourth and in the overtime, that was a pretty bad defensive effort in the first three quarters by him. I counted at least four plays where he was just lazy on defense, gave up open threes, didn't get back on defense, and even in transition defense, he would mark one man and then decide to go to another man, leaving the first man open for a layup. So still a lot to improve on with James. You know, it's weird with James. Even last year, there were times when he would be out of the game offensively, but when the team started picking up defensively and you saw the momentum shift, his game would naturally shift also. So for James to really get out of this, his team is going to have to pick him up because he's not a player that gets himself out of holes. He's not like even LeBron. You know, there are times with LeBron where when things aren't going well, even he needs the rest of his team. A lot of these guys need that. Only a few guys don't need that. Like Kobe, even when crap is going bad for him, he can still will himself into the game and make some big plays. James, you know, we're going to have to see this team step up around him and make big defensive efforts because that's when James really gets going.
Yeah, anything from you, Ali Khan?
I agree with him. First three quarters look terrible. He's still like the same James Harden we saw early in the season. But I saw some size in the fourth quarter and overtime. The Rockets have struggled mightily on the boards, and especially when you have Dwight come up for a block, nobody rotates over to defend the big for the rebound. And every time that Dwight comes up, they've been killed. Opposing teams have gone to the offensive rebound. Today, there were times in the fourth quarter overtime where Harden rotated over, Terrence Jones rotated over. Whenever Dwight went up for the block to alter the shot as he's supposed to do, somebody was there to help box out and contest for the rebound. And most of the time they got it because the Blazers were missing shots, and that's what opened up our transition game. That's what opened up those three-point opportunities, those fast break layups, those opportunities to draw fouls.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. James Harden really has to pick it up defensively, and maybe Bickerstaff's the guy to make him do that. He was the guy who pretty much single-handedly constructed the sixth best defense in the league last year, so I'll give him the benefit of the doubt for now. And this game was pretty encouraging signs. Aside from Harden, everybody else, I think they played a pretty good defensive game, except for the transition game. They could still get better at that. But, of course, first game with Bickerstaff, they haven't even had a shoot-around with him. They canceled shoot-around today because of Mikhail's firing. That's a good transition point. Do you want to talk about Mikhail? What were your initial reactions, both of you guys, when you saw the news hit Twitter with Mikhail getting fired?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it because I was driving in, getting ready for the show on ESPN, getting ready, and I saw Adrian Wojnarowski tweet it. And my first reaction was, is this one of those fake accounts? Because there was no rumblings at all about Mikhail getting fired. Fans were saying it, but there was no internal discussion. Nothing leaked about, you know, Mikhail's on the hot seat. It just came out of the blue. It really did. And I was shocked. I really was shocked because that's not a Daryl Morey move. And we found out later today it wasn't. It was a Les Alexander move. Les wanted to make this move. He felt like they needed to change something up. They still have the season in front of them. And, you know, maybe it's the right call. Maybe it's not. We'll find out. For everything that Mikhail lacks with the X's and O's and putting a structure on the court, he made the right moves when it mattered. If you guys are about, you know, winning regular season titles and you want to be first in the NBA and not win playoff games, then that's fine. Mikhail got into the playoffs, made the right moves in the playoffs, pushed the right buttons, got them to the Western Conference Final, but still, that didn't hide the fact that he's not a good X's and O's coach, and his team runs amok out there at times, actually a lot of times. So, you know, it was a move that, if it was in the back of their minds, I don't know why they waited into the season. Yeah, they would have taken a PR hit if they would have fired Mikhail after getting the team to the Western Conference Finals. But if it was in the back of your mind, why not make a bold move and bring in a guy right away and give him a chance to get an offseason under his belt, make sure the system's in place, and then go forward? To do it 11 games in and throw JB now, you know, into the fire, we'll see if it works out. But to me, if it was something that was in the back of your mind, I would have made the move in the offseason. I don't care about the money. I don't care about the PR hit. If you think Mikhail wasn't the guy, you make that move in the offseason, get somebody else in, and let them decide and put their system in.
Yeah, and it's important to note, they would have taken a PR hit anyways, in my opinion, because a lot of guys like Mikhail. Mikhail's a nice guy. Greg got an interview from what we hear all the time. Really smart guy. The players love him. But, yeah, I agree with you. If they were going to do this, they should have done this in the offseason instead of giving him that extension when they signed Josh Smith. I mean, I thought that extension was pretty out of the blue. You know, before they even did anything in the playoffs, they kind of gave him that three-year extension, and it was just... Yeah, I think the firing kind of came pretty out of a sudden. Like, this organization does keep things close to the vest, but I mean, still, we had no warning, no quotes that came out, you know, opposing Mikhail. I mean, they had a players only meetings, I think yesterday, and that was the only real red flag we got from, in terms of, you know, the team has lost Mikhail. So what do you think, Alikhan?
When I personally found out, I was actually in lab, so I didn't find out until like an hour and a half after it happened. But yeah. When I got out and I looked at my phone and I was like, wow. My genuine reaction was, wow. I'm a big fan of continuity. I feel like that I agreed with the philosophy that, you know, we should stick with the team, stick with the pieces, go with the flow, see what happens. And I could see it coming, but I did not expect this to happen at 4-7. I thought maybe they would wait till December or maybe until All-Star break. But, you know, when players hit a point of no return, when they don't trust in the game plan and leadership to get them where they need to be. And Coach Mikhail was supposed to be that leader. You already had your defensive coordinator, J.B. Bickerstaff. You already had your offensive coordinator, Chris Finch, Mikhail was there to be the leader, to get them going, to motivate them. And as great of a guy he is, and as much respect as I have for him, he just didn't get the job done. And in today's NBA, when you have to deal with your superstars, with your guards, with the guys who make the most plays, with the guys, you know, we have all these fancy stats. You need to have your players motivated to play hard every single night. And he just wasn't getting the job done. And this wasn't his fault entirely, but something had to be done, and unfortunately he came in the way.
Yeah, fair enough. I think we're both pretty much on board that we kind of saw this coming, but at the same time, not really. It felt, we thought it was probably, you know, a few games too soon. Personally, I liked Mikhail. I was a Mikhail defender for the past like a year and a half. He really impressed me in that playoff run. He made some key adjustments that I think won them the Clipper series. I think he outcoached Doc Rivers in that Clipper series, in my opinion.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that starting Josh Smith in the playoff series really turned the tide, from in my opinion, like bigger than benching Harden in that fourth quarter game six. I think starting Josh Smith really made the difference.
And I think what people don't give him enough credit for is that when he's got a new players, he's put them in positions to be successful. Why was Josh Smith successful? Why was Terrence Jones, if he plays consistent, why is he successful? It's because he allows players to adapt to what they do best and within the Rockets' offense and within the defense as well. And I think that people didn't give him enough credit for that. And like you look now, and what are the Rockets missing? They're missing that movement. They're missing all that, and that all comes from adaptability. And after he lost his voice in the locker room, after he lost his, you know, relationship with the players, it wasn't there anymore, and you know that's what the change had to be made.
Okay, yeah, and that's a concept that I struggle with. Do we blame our players accountable for not giving their full effort? Do we hold the coach accountable for, you know, not getting the players, you know, ready to play every game? That's something I really struggle with. I'm still not sure where I side on this Mikhail firing thing. I think I lean more towards the end where this move was probably supposed to happen, but maybe a few games later, maybe give him a few more games to get under his belt. But if the locker room truly was lost, if there really was a kind of divide amongst the players that Mikhail wasn't the guy, then I guess, you know, you have no choice. You know, the gun was pointed towards Leslie Alexander, and he shot it, and he made this move, and he made his decision to kind of regain the locker room. And that brings us to J.B. Bickerstaff. J.B. Bickerstaff was the interim coach hired to replace Mikhail, and I like this move. I really like J.B. Bickerstaff. I think me and Ali Khan are both pretty high on him. I think we've heard many times from people around the league that he was the guy responsible for, you know, making that top six defense in the NBA last year. He was the guy who kind of got,
he actually last summer, he discussed it. Last summer, he actually watched film from Dwight's Orlando days, and he sat down and developed a scheme that would properly utilize Dwight and create optimum turnovers. And that's what they did. They created a defense based around Dwight as a rim protector, with Trevor Ariza playing the passing lanes, and whenever they come out high on the pick and roll, they would double the ball handler, put guys in the right positions, force turnovers, and score in transition. And that was the formula for success last season. They ran. And this season, transition wasn't there. They weren't making the shots around the rim as well, and they weren't getting the rebounds. They weren't able to start the fast break. And the hope is within the Rockets organization is that with JB and his defensive mindset, you know, as the head coach, that they can get back to that. They can get back to what they do best, developing rhythm in transition, running, you know, outgunning teams. This team is fast. This team is athletic. This team is long. They weren't playing like it in the first 11 games. Now it's time to show what the strength of this team is.
Yeah, I agree with you. They were second in pace last year. They dropped back down to seventh, and that's an unacceptable for a team that was constructed with the mindset of running. And I agree with you. I like JB. I think the Rockets should give him a chance. Where do you stand on JB, Rahil?
I love JB. He's great in terms of defensive game plans and inside the Rockets organization, in the locker room, like Ali Khan already mentioned. He's regarded as the next guy. Him and Coach Finch are the next guys, right? The issue that I see happening here with the players, and you mentioned this, there's a fine line between is it the players' efforts or is it the coaching moves? Is it coaching moves that result in the players' effort? I mean, we see in other sports all the time. Outside of the top two coaches in every league, you think of Popovich, you think of Belichick, you know, guys like that, you're going to have players just tune out the coaches. It's going to happen. Inevitably, it always happens. I bet it's going to happen with the Clippers pretty soon, too. Watch. If they don't get to the NBA Finals, I bet you those players start tuning out Doc Rivers also. It happens everywhere. And, you know, that happened with McHale. Now, with JB, we've seen other coaches in other sports and with basketball, they'll get that initial pop from the players, and the players will be focused. But when that grind starts happening and he has to make some in-game adjustments, maybe he makes the wrong adjustments because the players start tuning him out after 30 games. What happens then? So that's what I'm more excited to see. Can he hold this ship aright for 30, 40, 50 games and all the way to the end of the season and into the playoffs? Because that's when it matters. If the goal still, according to Maury today, is they still think this is a championship team. This is a team that has the potential. So is JB here to coach them into the playoffs past the first round, or is he here to coach them to an NBA title? So we'll see what happens with that and see if the guys don't lose interest. I mean, that's a big concern because right now everyone's excited. Right now people are happy that JB's in charge and that, you know, a coach that the players like is now their coach. But what happens 30 games from now?
And one thing that he said after the game today was that James Harden is our leader, and he talked to him about, you know, he needs to upgrade his game. He needs to do a better job on both ends. And I think that's going to be the biggest thing for me is how does James Harden respond to him 30, 40, 50 games down the line? This team clearly looks at James Harden. James Harden needs this team to pick him up as much as this team needs James Harden to pick them up. And if James Harden isn't on board, then, I mean, what are the Rockets going to do?
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I think the Rockets should give JB some run. They should give him some leeway, give him, like, at least 10 to 20 games before they start looking for a new coach. Because I think JB could be the guy. I mean, he's highly regarded around the league by other GMs. I mean, if he wasn't going to get this head coaching job, chances are he was going to get another head coaching job because everybody likes him. Everybody thinks JB, he's like his dad. His dad was a great coach, Bernie Bickerstaff. Everybody loved Bernie. Everybody has the same feelings towards JB. Everybody thinks he can make a, you know, run a pretty good team. And
what a great first head coaching job because, yeah, you know, like he waits. Let's say McHale doesn't get fired. The Rockets, let's just say in a bizarro world, okay? Mm-hmm. Rockets get off to a hot start. They win the NBA title. He's the toast of the town, and they're like, JB's next up. And you have to go coach the Sixers. Or you have to go coach the Bucks. Like, what a great first coaching job. He gets the Rockets with two, you know, bona fide superstars already on the roster and not going to a job where you have to deal with a bunch of rookies or second or third year guys. Like, that is a great break for JB also.
And he's developed relationships with the players. Every time I go to a game, I always see him on the court during shoot-around, working with the players, getting them ready, getting them into rhythm. And I think that's why the Rockets trust him, because they understand that he already has a built-in relationship with most of these guys and that he knows how to push their buttons. And, I mean, as you talk about, Raheel, it remains to be seen what we'll see 30, 40, 50 games down the line into the postseason. But it's good to have a coach who's able to push these guys' guys' buttons and put them in positions mentally and physically in positions to win.
Yeah. And I mean, we're hearing from the Rockets that they're going to stick with JB for the rest of the season. But, I mean, we always hear that from guys when interim head coaches come in. They always say they're going to stick with the guy, and then 20, 30 games down the season, they find a new guy. What do you guys think? We've heard some names. We heard Tom Thibodeau. We heard Jeff Van Gundy. I think Scott Brooks is a name. What do you guys think of possible replacements, or should they just stick with JB? Should they ride it out with him?
I think if JB gets him to anywhere between a 6 and a 4 seed, win the first round series, they're sticking with JB because, like we just mentioned, he is a guy that's highly regarded. He is next up. You know, if you bring in a Tibbs and Dwight's not here next year, how effective will he be? Because he really needs a good defensive team to get this going. You know, Scotty Brooks, I'm not too high on him.
Scotty Brooks is more of a developmental coach. If I was the Lakers, I would look at him as my coach. But if you're a championship team who needs a defensive architect or an offensive architect to put you over the hump, you know, these guys like Scotty Brooks, Kevin McHale, I feel like, is a great developmental coach. You know, if I can see him, you know, there was a report out that he could be on his way to Boston or Minnesota. So, I mean, I could see that happening. But if you want to go to a championship, you need a coach who gets you over that hump, who already has that scheme in mind that has been successful in the league.
Yeah, and I'm not too high on Tom Thibodeau. I mean, their whole goal, we're bringing in a new coach, is kind of regaining the locker room. I think Tom Thibodeau is not the guy if you're looking to regain the locker room. I mean, he yells at guys, he plays guys like 45 minutes a night. He's going to tire guys down. They're going to play like 2 days, like a lot throughout the season. And, you know, guys are going to get tired of him just like they got tired of Kevin McHale. He runs a slow pace offense. Every year he was in Chicago, they were towards the end of the league in pace. And the Rockets run a fast offense. They want to be top two, top three in pace. And I don't think Tom Thibodeau is that guy. I think they need someone who's willing to run a fast offense while still maintaining a defensive identity that they've kind of developed last year.
Yeah, I this will never happen because he's already in a really marquee job. But gosh, I love Brad Stevens with the
Celtics. Oh yeah,
oh yeah.
I love, and I think he's that next great coach, that, you know, 20-year coach, and he wouldn't leave Boston because Boston, let's be honest, that's as good of a job in the NBA that you can get. Now, those are marquee jobs. That's a marquee job, and he has a nice roster there. But man, if Morey can somehow lure him away from Boston, gosh, that is a... I think Stevens is going to be... He's going to be up there. In the next 5 to 10 years, he's one of those guys that... Now he's going to get to an NBA Finals, and he's going to win one also.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm really high on Brad Stevens, too. They have a great management there, too. I have a feeling, you know, in the next couple of years, they're going to bring in a superstar. They have a lot of assets to trade, much like Houston did a few years ago.
They're probably going to have the number one pick in the draft this season, too.
With the Nets pick, yeah. Yeah.
Ben Simmons.
what about this? Because they have so many young guys already, and just off the top of my head, I think their cap is wide open. What if Dwight goes there next year?
Yeah. It's on the table.
They've always been looking for a center to back that defense up.
But Sullivan right now is their center, and that's embarrassing.
Yeah, right. and the only reason he's there is because he can, you know, semi consistently knock down the three. Other than that, they're relying on Olynyk to help create their offense. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you can rely on him. And David Lee's terrible defensively. I mean, when he played against the Rockets here, we just over and over again just attack him on the pick and roll. I mean, they do need some defensive help inside.
Yeah, and I don't want to get too much into this because this is a Rockets podcast, but what do you guys think of DeMarcus Cousins heading to Boston? Just quick thoughts, because I can really see that happening. If George Karl really wants to get rid of DeMarcus, and if the Kings really want to move on from him, I mean, we've heard reports that management wants to move on.
I'll just say this. Sacramento is a whorehouse, and that right now is DeMarcus's team. And then the next day, it'll be George Karl's team. And then the next day, it'll be DeMarcus's team again. So right now, I have no idea what's going to happen. I can't give you the right answer.
I don't think the Celtics bring Cousins in. I think they need a veteran. They don't need another, you know, perceived young guy. Cousins still acts immature, although he's been in the league now for 4 years.
Five, I think.
So you're saying if you're Danny Ainge and you have the Nets pick, and DeMarcus Cousins and Vlade Divac calls you with an offer for that Nets pick with DeMarcus Cousins, you don't pull the trigger?
I don't need DeMarcus on my team. I'd rather take the gamble and see if there's a veteran center. Maybe, you know, you get Dwight for another 3 good years, and yeah, you're gonna have to overpay him, but I would rather take that than Cousins, because Cousins is a cancer in the locker room, and with a bunch of young guys, you're gonna pick up bad habits. You're gonna have a coach who already has his team now fighting with the player on his team at all times, no, I'm good. You know what? I don't want Cousins on my roster.
Fair enough.
Hey, Raheel. What are your thoughts on this whole Khloe Kardashian curse?
It's not a curse. It's a lifestyle. You know, this is with the Kardashians. There's a lifestyle. There's Chris always. Chris Kardashian. Is that Chris Jenner? What's her name? The mom, the madam of them all.
Yeah.
She's always whispering in your ear about, hey, you know, you're the superstar. Or, hey, you know, you should sign this deal, or you should do this, and this is good for business. There's something to it. It's, you know, people like to make fun of it as a curse, but there really is something there, because when you're part of that tribe, you're doing dumb things, and you're taking dumb advice. I mean, there's a track record of athletes who get involved with these women, and it hasn't gone well for them.
Yeah,
we can joke about it all you want, but when you're picking hanging out in Hollywood over practicing or being part of Team USA and just being there for the younger guys during their mini camp that they just had, that's the curse right there. So I think there is something to it.
Yeah, and Lamar Odom's a good example of that. You know, sixth man of the year, he had everything, man. He had all the talents. Like, he was one of those first stretch versatile fours that we've seen in the NBA. Like, he's kind of started the generation, like, secretly. No one really gives him enough credit for that. He was a 7-footer that could pass the ball, run the floor, run the offense for a few minutes. I mean, he was a really, really talented player, and he just fell off a cliff when he started dating Khloe. And I don't want to speculate too much on personal matters, but I mean, it just seems like, you know, too, like, there's, it just doesn't seem like a coincidence here. I mean, he starts hanging out with Khloe Kardashian. He gets a signature, gets $200 million from Adidas, and then we see this drop off in production from him. And we
not only to mention, he just signed a sock deal today or a couple days ago.
A sock? Was it with the NBA sponsor?
Was it with Stance?
Yeah, Stance.
Yeah, Stance.
Yeah. How much was that deal worth?
I'm not to look back, but I mean, I know. It's a good sum of money.
Look,
with Lamar, that happened also. You know, when he starts winning championships and he gets the attention of Khloe and he's with them, and now he's filming reality shows. He has his own reality show. It was Khloe and Lamar Take Dallas or whatever it was called. You know, you're focused on different things. So when you come home, and you got cameras in your faces, and you've got the mom telling you to do one thing, and your gut instinct telling you to do the other, your boys are telling you another. That bears down on people. It really does, and that's part of fame. That's understood. But when you think about LeBron, Steph Curry, Kobe, Dwayne Wade, even Dwayne Wade went through that with Gabriel Union. Those guys, they come home, they're good, they're focused. Kobe's up at 5 a.m. LeBron's focused on his game. Steph Curry, he's working. He looks better than last year.
He's the best player in the NBA. He's the best.
Yeah.
By a long shot.
It's crazy because these guys aren't focused on other things. They're focused on one thing. They're focused on winning and becoming the best player in the world. I don't see that with James. I really don't. And
he's focused on his personal brand, and it's clear as day. You can see that. Especially this offseason.
Yeah.
And like, it doesn't look like he worked on anything tangible in his game. I don't think he worked. I can't speculate, but I don't think he worked on any aspect of his game that has improved. The post game we saw today, everybody's talking about, they want me to look at the post game on my film study. And it's like, I've seen that last year. What is something new that I have not seen from Harden this year? He doesn't even have the same burst of speed when he attacks the lane. It's just, something seems off.
Yeah, and he worked on his turnovers this offseason, and I really doubt that. I mean, he's still turning the ball over at a high volume, and
passes haven't been as accurate too. When they run those flare screens, they need his passes to be on point to the shooter's hand so he can dip and release a shot. He's been very off target this year.
Yeah, you know, the post game move, when you go back and watch this, throughout all the games so far, 12 games in now, he'll go to the post earlier in the games, and if there's a guy, even if it's a smaller guy, that bodies him up and makes it hard for him, he'll finish that post move, but then he won't go back in the post for the rest of the game. So I mean, yeah, you worked on your post move, but if you're still uncomfortable because of contact, then what did you really work on? And, you know, a lot of guys, the scouting report now, it's so easy on James. When he's driving in, he's going to try to get under your arms. And I've seen players defensively now, when James goes for that, you know, to draw the foul, they just move their hands or they try to get below him so he can't draw fouls. And the refs aren't giving him every single call like they did last year or the year before.
Oh, because, no question.
You know, every coaching staff is now, because I was watching even today, there are a few calls there. If I was a Portland fan or a Portland coach, I'm sending tape to the NBA right away saying this has to stop because this isn't basketball. James is just, now he's not even looking for a shot. He's just tying you up and forcing a foul, which is fine, but I think the NBA has caught on this.
Yeah, and there was one instance in the game where it was McCollum was guarding him.
Was it the one where he hooked his arm? Arm?
Actually, it was one. It's one of his step back moves. So Harden now has been, you know, starting on the left side, and he knows that they're going to take away the left lane, so he's going to go to the right. And when he goes to the right, he lullabies the dribble multiple times. So and after the second or third time, you can take that gamble, and teams are catching on to that pattern, and they're stripping the ball away or forcing a turnover.
Yeah, and his dribble doesn't look as tight as it was last year. Like he had a really, really good control of the basketball last year. Like, he could dribble the ball as much as he wanted to, and no one could take the ball. It feels like his dribble is a little bit looser now, and like guys are they can stick their hand in and they can get that ball easily. And yeah. I don't know what it is with him. He has to get his game together if the Rockets are going to make that next step under J.B. Bickerstaff.
My co-host John Granato, he has a source who told him, and this is a damn good source because I know who it is. He said Harden came in 17 pounds overweight this season. So wow. That's everything you need to know. He came in 17 pounds overweight. So it's going to take 6 weeks now to shed that weight, to get back, get your legs going. So that does two things. One, did he really work hard on his game in the offseason? Because if he did, he's not coming in 17 pounds. And two, you know, this slow start, is it a coincidence? No, because when you're 17 pounds overweight, you don't have your leg, you don't have that same edge like you did last year. Of course you're going to get off to one of the worst starts in franchise history.
Yeah, and if this was last year, the Rockets, like, they're out of the playoff picture by now. But the thing is,
Rockets did start 4-7 last year. What is the difference? The difference is effort. The difference is leadership. The difference is it's not the same team, not the same effort, not the same burst, not the same speed, not the same athleticism. It's just not there right now.
Yeah, and they're getting blown out.
Yeah, exactly. They're getting blown out this year by teams that won't even make a playoff. If I recall, last year's 4-7, it was still pretty tight game. You're getting blown out by the Nuggets. You're getting blown out. Look, Portland had a 19-point lead today, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. It took a damn good miracle effort there at the end in the fourth to win this game. So
when Dallas does not even have three of their top scorers in the game, and they're just getting shot after shot, and you're letting Raymond Felton ISO you up and get into a rhythm, that's just unacceptable.
Brooklyn got their first win against the Rockets. They were 0-7, came into Houston, and won a game against them. They won pretty convincingly, too. And the Rockets made a sort of a comeback in that second half, but they still didn't get a good win. I mean, it was terrible. I mean, they won their first game against the Rockets. I mean, usually you think of a team like Brooklyn, who doesn't even have their draft pick next year. They get their win against, you know, perhaps another lottery team, but they came into Houston and they got a good quality win against them. And I'm just here shaking my head, because these guys are going to be towards the top of the lottery next year.
If you lose to a team that has Nick Young as your shooting guard.
Wait, the Nets? You talking about the Lakers?
Yeah. So the Lakers beat the Nets, right?
Yeah.
So if you lose to a team that lost to Nick Young, then I'm gonna laugh at you.
Yeah. And yeah. Joe Johnson bodied up James Harden in that game too. It was really disgusting to watch. I didn't like any minute of that game. And you're seeing the fans start to boo this team now. Like at home, they get a lot of boos now. Like towards the end of the third quarter, you see fans leaving the stadium because they know this is not the best basketball they've seen. They've seen better basketball from the Rockets, and they don't like this half-ass effort either. They want to see a better basketball team, and hopefully. Under JB Bickerstaff, I mean, they're 7 games behind the 8-ball now, but hopefully under JB Bickerstaff, they can bounce back from this and, you know, make a run at, I don't know, maybe at least the 5th seed, try to get home court advantage if you can, but I don't know. I mean, their schedule is still kind of light for the next few games. I mean, they play Memphis twice, they play Philadelphia. They can get a couple wins here and maybe get back to 500, maybe a couple games over 500, but they're behind the 8-ball and they need to step it up. They need to step it up. It's pretty sad to watch a team that we all expected to do really well this year. I had them to win 60 games in the championship this year, and it's clearly 60 games isn't going to happen this year, but maybe they can make a comeback and try to make a deep run in the playoffs, but I don't even know if that's going to happen.
Yeah, for sure, and it'll be interesting if they play 500 or, you know, right above 500 ball, and by the All-Star break and the trade deadline, you just kind of see them that, you know, this isn't the year and this is it. The writing's on the wall. I'd be interested to see, you know, do they start looking for a dealer for Dwight, for Lawson? Do you just break up some of these pieces that you're going to lose anyways in the offseason?
Oh, and you made a good point. Lawson didn't play at all down the stretch in this game.
Yeah.
Like, he was on the bench for the entire fourth quarter, and towards the end of the third, like, he did not play at all, and he's playing like complete crap. This is not what you expected from Ty Lawson.
I'm gonna give him and JB the benefit of the doubt today because they did not have a walkthrough. Mm-hmm. But
fair
next
enough.
Game will be interesting to see how they incorporate him. JB says he wants him to come off the bench. He wants him to attack. I've watched Ty Lawson film I've watched a lot of his film over the summer. I know what he's capable of. I know he can attack. I know he has an array of hesitation moves. He can score on you in a hurry. He can beat your defense. The thing is that right now, he's just very tentative. I don't think he's comfortable yet within this offense or what the offense was. But I'm going to give the team, you know, one or two more games to see how they're going to incorporate him, and then we can judge. But you know, you're right. He needs to step up. You are the point guard. You need to lead this team up the floor. You are the floor general. They brought you in for that reason. You are there to help Harden facilitate. You don't have to take over, but you need to help facilitate. And right now, he's not even doing a good job at that.
Yeah, and I was watching the game with my dad this evening, and I just whispered to him, like, thank God the Rockets made this contract non-guaranteed, because, I mean, if he keeps playing like this, wouldn't you, if you're the Rockets, wouldn't you cut ties with him and try to go after a guy like Kevin Durant the offseason? I mean, I'd rather have him for the money you give Durant than, you know, someone like Ty Lawson who's playing like complete garbage right now.
Yeah, well, that's the big thing is, you know, if Dwight, you get rid of Dwight and Lawson and you free up room for the Durant push, and we'll see what happens. I don't think he's coming here. He's too loyal.
I honestly think he'll stay one more year. Take the contract and decide next year.
And become a free agent with Russell Westbrook and Serge Ibaka the same year.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to end up happening. Kevin Love was something I figured that would happen with Kevin Love, but he signed on to a contract extension. But I really feel like that Kevin Durant will likely, you know, do that extension, come out again before the lockout when there's a lot of money available. Before, like, you know, when the lockout comes, I guarantee you the players and the owners will figure out the cap situation. But beforehand, you want to get paid. You want to get it. You want to get as much money as you possibly can. I think he waits one more year, then he goes back.
Yeah, we'll see. It's going to be interesting. I'm kind of pumped now. We got Saturday night. You got the Knicks. I'm excited to watch the Alabaster Ewing.
Porzingis. Oh, dude, Godzingis,
right? I love Porzingis, man.
Godzingis, yeah. Or Porzingis.
I'm so happy for that guy. I'm so happy. Like, in the draft, this guy got booed by New York fans pretty hard. And this guy's, I mean, he's shutting a lot of people up. I mean, Stephen A. Smith is starting to bite his tongue now a little bit because he went off on him when the Knicks selected him at the number, I think it was the 4th pick. And I mean, he's played above his draft position.
Well, when we look back in 10 years, and when Karl-Anthony Towns has won numerous championships, LOL. we're gonna look back and say that Porzingis God was the second best player in this draft class.
Yeah,
and I really believe that.
Maybe
he's looking good so far. I just want to watch him an entire game and not highlights.
Man, this draft class was so talented.
He hasn't played more than, like, I think 30 minutes in a game yet, and that's ridiculous.
Yeah, this draft class was so talented. I mean, Moutier is playing well. Towns is playing well. Okafor's had a good couple games. I'm pretty excited to see, like, in 5 or 6 years, when we look back at this draft class, where does it rank above the best of all time drafts? I mean, these players have came out and you know, proven they have star potential, and I'm pretty excited to see where it goes. I mean, yeah, I think that's a pretty good end point for this podcast. Again, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. We have a new feed, so you can resubscribe to us. Give us a good rating. If you like the podcast, give us a good rating. If you don't like the podcast, go to another podcast, give them a bad rating, come back to ours, and give us a good rating. Hope you guys have a good day.
Insurance-minded speeches from Geico.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the Geico app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the Geico app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you.